This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture with me, Dashrin Johan. And joining me on Skype are two women's rights activists. First up, we have Nisha Sabanayagam, Program and Operations Manager at the All Women's Action Society, aka AWAM. Welcome to the show, Nisha.
Hi, thank you for having me, Darshan.
Good to have you on the show. And next, we have Rusni Tajari, who is a Senior Advocacy Officer of the Women's Aid Organization. Hello, Rusni. How are you doing?
Good. Hello. Thanks for having me, Darshan.
Lovely to have you on the show. And the reason I have these two awesome ladies with me today is because it's International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women. In light of that, what we're going to be doing today is look back and reflect on 2020, look at how COVID-19 and lockdowns contributed to the rise in gender-based violence, examine if political instability slowed down efforts to curb GBV, as well as look forward to 2021. But before that, just to give you some context, gender-based violence refers to harmful acts directed at an individual based on their gender. It is rooted in gender inequality, the abuse of power, and harmful norms. So things like domestic violence, sexual harassment, stalking, genital mutilation, forced marriages, and many more fall under gender-based violence. Nisha, would you say that that is an accurate description of gender-based violence?
Yes, maybe what I would like to add here as well, and I think I'm sure Rusni also has quite a few bits of information to add. A lot of people assume that gender-based violence is something that's very physical because, you know, the word violence gives us this impression of just physical violence. But gender-based violence actually comes in all kinds of forms. You know, you can have it as a psychological form. You can have it as a verbal form, you know, harsh words that can actually cause a lot of emotional and mental distress can also be considered as gender-based violence. What I wanted to add on to your definition is that it's actually a very wide and there's a huge variety in terms of what gender-based violence actually consists of. It's not just physical violence.
And Rusni, what type of gender-based violence would you say is most prevalent in Malaysia?
I would say like the most prevalent in Malaysia, of course, it's domestic violence because it's a very prominent issues that happen in Malaysia. But this is not only that gender-based violence that happen in Malaysia. I would say, of course, there are also types of violence such as sexual harassment, stalking, rape, sexual jokes in a workplace. Some of people didn't know that this is also a type of violence and also earned harassment that happened to most of the women. And also that I think that is most important issues that we need to recognize as well is the intimate partner violence that is very rare or very rarely to bring forward to discuss about it because, you know, even though this is not recognized under the law for the intimate partner under Domestic Violence Act, but this is something like very crucial issues in Malaysia also.
What Rusni said is really, really true. Intimate partner violence is a big, big social ill. And I think it's getting worse as the years go by. But unfortunately, it's not really recognized in any laws, which is quite sad. And it's quite prevalent among the younger people as well. University students, college-going students. It's something that happens quite a lot among young people because I think it's also young people actually are at that stage when they're just starting to explore relationships. So they don't know much about boundaries. They don't know much about consent. And they are also, you know, quite vulnerable when it comes to their first time or second relationship. So sometimes they accept certain bad behavior as normalization, as normal, because they just really have not had enough experience.
Nisha, just to clarify, intimate partner violence is pretty much something like domestic violence, but it involves non-married couples. Am I correct?
Yes, that's right. So there's no official paperwork. There's no official registry that has you as a husband or a wife. There's nothing in that form.
Right.
In Malaysia or in most Southeast Asian countries, I think it's a very Western concept where in Western countries, when you live with a person for a long enough time, you can actually then actually officially call that person your partner. You don't have to be married, but you can call that person your partner, and then certain laws cover that person as your partner, even when it comes to like division of like, you know, assets and stuff like that. But in Malaysia, we are not quite there yet. And of course, you know, this is also because, you know, we're much more conservative country in many ways.
Right. Let's talk about political instability, because as we know, Langkah Sheraton happened in February, which led to the fall of the Pakatan Harapan government and the forming of the Perikatan National Government. I'm curious to know if the change in government, as well as the political instability or the political turmoil that we are faced with right now, derail any of your plans or goals that y'all initially set for yourself heading into 2020?
So obviously, as you know, the women's groups, various members of JAG and also various other women's organizations and also other human rights organizations were working really hard together with the Pakatan Harapan government at that time via the Ministry of Women, Community and Family Development to work on the sexual harassment bill. So all of us worked together. As most people know by now, the sexual harassment bill was drafted way 20 years ago, right? And at every level, I think whenever a new women's minister came in, it was, you know, the women's organizations would advocate for it to be passed as a standalone law. And to give credit to the past ministers and the past governments, I think they were, there was really no real obstacles or no real challenges against having a standalone law, but perhaps there was no real political will. And so for this, we really have to give credit to the Pakatan Harapan government, especially YB Hanayo, together with a lot of support from YB Wan Aziza, that they really pushed it from the top to make sure that their ministry took the effort to actually work with all these necessary stakeholders to look at the draft that had already been done 20 years ago and to update it, right? So we worked throughout the whole of 2019. We were at meetings with the ministry almost every month, at least twice or once a month for sure. And the meetings were like whole day meetings. They even like hold us up in a hotel for 3 days so we could look at laws in other countries as well, so that we would get a really comprehensive bill that we could take to Parliament and that we could pass into a standalone act without much objections. And the plan was for it to happen in March 2020. Unfortunately, as you know, the government had a quick switcheroo. And of course, the first thing we all thought about was, oh, wow, is the bill going to go through? Because, you know, now we have a new minister, we have a new deputy minister. And obviously with other agencies as well, there definitely would have been some changes at the top. And true enough, you know, this caused a little bit of disruption where the bill was concerned. There were also lots of other bills that were in the making. I think the stalking bill was also very much WAO was also pushing for the stalking bill, and I think they had reached also a certain stage where, you know, they were hoping that it would be passed in 2020 as well. The paternity amendments to the Employment Act, right, Rusni?
Yeah,
which they were also really hoping to push to really push forward and have some definite amendments to the law. So all this kind of got swept aside with the current change, and of course, it didn't help that COVID-19 happened at the same time. And yes, we understand that the government definitely had their hands full, but we were really, really hoping for the sexual harassment bill at least to be passed through Parliament, simply because the bill had been drafted in its entirety. So we were really hoping to see at least some positive change where that was concerned. But unfortunately, yeah, so the change in government caused us that worry. And it seems that probably our worry is valid, because there doesn't seem to be much sign that the bill is going to be passed this year.
I did share the same sentiments with Nisha, because we are, especially for the Joint Action Group for Gender Equality, the JAG, which is AWAM and WAO is part of it. We've been working for quite some time to have like these law amendments to be happen in 2020. But as said by Nisha earlier on, because of the changing of the government, but we also are very hoping that this is to be the most important thing in 2021 for, especially for the Ministry of Women, Family and Community Development to look forward to.
All right. On that note, we do need to go for a quick commercial break. I'm speaking with Nisha Sabanayagam of the All Women's Action Society and Rusni Tajari of the Women's Aid Organization on gender-based violence in 2020. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Darshan Johan and I'm joined by Nisha Sabanayagam, Program and Operations Manager of the All Women's Action Society, as well as Rusni Tajari, Senior Advocacy Officer of the Women's Aid Organization. And what we're doing today is looking back at 2020, how COVID-19 and lockdowns contributed to the rise in gender-based violence, as well as 2021 goals. So, Nisha, let's talk about COVID-19. I think when the virus first hit, most of us were only concerned about a couple of things, infection rate and death toll. But as weeks went by, we realized that COVID-19 and the subsequent lockdowns have other equally dangerous consequences. And one of it is gender-based violence. Perhaps you can start by telling us how and why COVID-19 caused a spike in gender-based violence.
That's a really good question, and I'm glad that you brought it up, because definitely one of the biggest outcomes that we experienced as a result of COVID-19, not just the issue of, you know, a huge number of people, you know, getting easily infected by the virus,
right,
and also the fact that a lot of people lost their jobs because of lockdowns, but the fact that, you know, gender-based violence was on the rise as a direct outcome of the movement control orders, which was a direct outcome of the pandemic. It became such a huge global issue that they actually called it a pandemic within a pandemic. The experts all around the world would talk about it. And if you go online and you look at, you know, the United Nations website or the World Health Organization's website, you can see that, you know, they saw it as a very, very crucial issue.
Right.
And of course, the biggest issue that we saw in most countries, in Malaysia included, was the increase in domestic violence. And obviously, if you think about it a little bit, it makes a lot of sense, you know, because especially during that very first couple of, I think, was it 6 to 8 weeks where we had the really strict movement control order where we could not go out of the house at all except right. for necessities. So when you stick a bunch of people in a house, then everybody's like, you know, stuck together, and, you know, parents have to try to work online while taking care of their kids. This creates a lot of issues, right? One of the biggest issues that it created for us was that it allowed perpetrators to be in the same space for a long time with the survivors of GBV, with the survivors of domestic violence. So obviously, with the increased tension, that also created a lot of anger issues. And some people, you know, perpetrators are not able to control their anger issues, which is why they actually whack their wives or they whack their husbands or they whack their children, right? So the closed confines added a lot to the increase in GBV, especially domestic violence. The lack of jobs and the stress that comes with the lack of job and not being able to bring money into the household also caused a lot of, also added on to the issues of GBV. The women not being able to go out or send their children out for daycare, therefore making them vulnerable to their perpetrators because they're stuck 24/7 with their perpetrators, also led to the increase in gender-based violence. So we focused a lot on domestic violence in Malaysia, but the other thing that we also started to look at was sexual harassment, especially online sexual harassment.
Right.
With online sexual harassment, a lot of people were spending more and more time on their computers. So it allowed for a lot of opportunity for sexual harassment to happen online because people were online. That was the only way that they could communicate at that point. And so it opened doors for online sexual harassment to happen. And actually, we saw an increase in online sexual harassment cases in Awam, especially. And I think it's pretty similar even with WAO and other women's organizations who are working on sexual harassment, that cases are increasing as the months go by. And even with the movement control order being a little less restrictive now, we still see an increase in online sexual harassment.
Oh, yeah. In 2020, the statistic that we had for specifically for domestic violence from January to October through our hotline and also TINA, which is TINA is stand for Think I Need Aid, for WhatsApp and phone, it's increasing. For our hotline, it's like 2,000 inquiries that we got. And for Tina, it's also like 1,500 inquiries. As compared to 2019 statistic, which is, this is pre-COVID statistic, same as like from January to October, we only got like 500 cases for hotline and 800 cases for Tina. So the comparison between pre-COVID and during COVID and as of now, it's actually increasing. It's a lot of increasing, like 60% increasing of the cases.
Of course, we're a smaller organization. Our numbers are smaller, but we see the same trend in increase. For example, you know, we have received to date for the year. So COVID started sometime in March, right?
Correct.
So our data from March right up to now, in total, I would say that we've received more than close to 500 cases. And 500 cases for Awam is huge because on average, we actually receive about 100 cases per year. Mm-hmm. So this is 12 months, 100 cases. And now we're only like 8 months, 9 months. Okay, 10 months because it's already November. 10 months and we have received close to 500 cases.
That is crazy.
Yeah, it is. It's a huge jump. So you see it in the bigger organization, you see it in the smaller organization. And if you extrapolate these statistics, you are definitely going to see it at, statewide or nationwide.
Speaking of data, I'm wondering if there is a disconnect between what NGOs are saying and what law enforcement officers are. So for example, in August, Malay Mail did an interview with Bukit Aman Sexual, Women and Child Investigation Division Principal Assistant Director, Superintendent Siti Kamsiah Hassan. And I found this interview both interesting, but also a little bit worrying. So she said that cases of domestic violence, particularly involving spouses, actually dropped during lockdown.
I think what we actually need to look at is how we actually collect data. What are our requirements in collecting data? What are their requirements in collecting data? What is our definition of domestic violence? What is their definition of domestic violence? Do they have the same kind of definitions? Does it include, you know, mental, physical, emotional? It could be that, you know, they looked at a very different fields, a data structure. And for them, okay, we did not see an increase. But obviously with AWAM, with WAO, and with other women's organizations, even WCC in Penang up north, we all saw an increase. So I think what we should look at more pertinently is, first of all, obviously we need to address the issue of domestic violence, increase or no increase. We need to have a proper, effective, holistic approach to domestic violence. And that just does not just stop with the police. Okay, we need to work with the welfare department. We need to work with legislation. We need to work with the finance ministry to ensure that there's enough resources being poured into shelters, into NGOs, into social workers, so that, you know, looking at the issue of toxic masculinity. Why do perpetrators beat their wives, you know?
Right.
We need to look into this very, very holistically. And it's not something that only the civil society organizations should be handling. It's not something that just the police should be handling. You know, it needs to be something that we look at every level of society to see how we address this holistically. And what we all need to come together and do together is we need to all come together and pool our data and figure out a very systematic manner of collecting data so that we all share the same kind of database and the same kind of data structure. So that when we talk about domestic violence, we're all talking about it from the same page. Domestic violence is not going to go away in the next 1 year. It's not going to go away in the next 2 years. It's something that we're going to have to probably look into for the next decade or so before we can actually even make a proper dent into it. But we need to at least have a really good foundation to start from. And I think that, you know, the fact that we have an opportunity now with the budget being there, with enough money being put into JASA, with the fact that we have, data collected from various sources, let's all come together, pool our data, look at the issue systematically and work towards coming up with a very long-term sustainable solution.
You know, one of the things that both of you have brought up multiple times today is harassment. You would think that because there are lockdowns and everyone is just staying at home, the one thing women would face much less is sexual harassment or just harassment in general. But around the world, you read stories and see evidence of different kinds of harassment that have arisen during the pandemic. Online sexual harassment is one. women getting harassed by Grab food riders when they deliver food is another. To me, when I look at, when I read all these news, the first thing that comes to mind is that for many women, there's just simply no catching a break, is there?
Wow. That's a really good way of putting it. Yes, there is no catching a break for many women because we are stuck in a patriarchal society. Unless we really, you know, are able to break that patriarchal mold and get rid of this notion that, you know, women are second best or second class to men, I think that we're going to have problems of gender-based violence and discrimination against women for the longest time. The example that you brought up was so good and so interesting because this is a Grab driver. The fact that a Grab driver feels he actually had the guts and the bravery to speak to her about something so sensitive says a lot about the patriarchal culture in Malaysia, because he felt that he would be able to do this and get away with it. We need to push out to people this awareness and this knowledge that sexual harassment is wrong. You can't simply do it to anybody, male or female. And if you do it to somebody, there are laws that can actually protect the person who is being sexually harassed. Of course, a better law would be the sexual harassment bill that should be tabled as soon as possible. We should all be adopting this zero tolerance policy towards sexual harassment. I think if the rakyat, you know, if the Malaysian public actually, you know, embrace this whole zero tolerance policy towards sexual harassment, we would see less and less cases happening. And I must say something here, and I think that we should actually put a little bit of a shout out to JPW, which is Jabatan Pembangunan Wanita under the Kementerian Wanita. They actually have started putting out billboards in certain parts of KL where they are warning people about sexual harassment and telling people that sexual harassment is wrong and it's something that you should not be indulging in. And they just started this sometime in November, actually. So that's kudos to them, kudos to the ministry for doing that. And more of these kind of public service messages should come out from the government.
Actually, WAO and also we co-partnering with the research agency, which is VAS.AI. Actually, we had recently launched a result of our survey, Voices of Malaysian Women on Discrimination and Harassment in the Workplace. So in the survey, actually, it says that 62% of women surveyed said that they have experienced one or more form of sexual harassment in the workplace. So that's why I think we always think that the urgency to have the sexual harassment bill by 2020 and we look forward by 2021 is much more important for us. So this statistic shows us like urgency of the sexual harassment bill is important.
You know, we may never be able to eradicate gender-based violence altogether. It's a fight that will probably never end, but we have to keep on, you know, pushing. But what does Malaysia need to do to ensure that perpetrators know they can't get away with it and survivors know that there's always space for them to tell their stories and there are people that are willing to listen? What are the laws? What are the structural changes that we need to see in Malaysia?
Rusni just said it, right? She said that we need to have the sexual harassment bill tabled.
Yes, yes, we do.
And I think I'm just going to add on to what Rusni said, that why the urgency is so important. Because although we do have laws, they don't really make it easy for people to actually make report. You have to go through a process. You have to get legal representation, and not everybody has money for legal representation. Mm. Your privacy is not covered. You know, it becomes a public issue. You have to go to the police to make a police report in order to be able to take it to court. And sometimes, if you're unlucky, you may get a frontliner in the police force who's not so sympathetic towards you. You are probably not aware about, you know, the options that are available to you. You feel a lot of shame because sexual harassment is still in many places a taboo topic. So when you have something like a Sexual Harassment Act, which we hope that the bill will eventually become. The sexual harassment bill encourages, in fact, makes it a must for all organizations to have their own internal sexual harassment policy. And it has to be a working policy. And when you have a working policy, you are required and obligated to implement that policy. So if somebody comes to you with a complaint of sexual harassment, you have to take action. And if you don't take action, the bill allows the person who comes to you with that complaint to actually go to a tribunal. And the tribunal can actually make that organization take action in order to make sure that, you know, sexual harassment does not happen in that organization. So we offer the option of a tribunal, which is just another option that supports the current laws, but an option that makes it easier for people to actually make reports. So you don't have to go to the police, you can go straight directly to the tribunal. And the tribunal will comprise of people who are very well versed with issues of sexual harassment. So, you know, it's somebody who, when you come to them and you give them when you talk to them about a complaint of sexual harassment, they will get it. Because what we get right now is people who don't understand the complaints. They don't understand how a sexual harassment complaint can actually affect a person emotionally and psychologically for the long term. Awan receives people coming in for counseling because they've been sexually harassed 10 years ago. And something triggered them. Yeah, something triggered them. You know, maybe they got a boss who reminds them of the old boss who actually harassed them 10 years ago. And right. I'm pretty sure it's the same with WAO as well. And I think when WAO did this survey, the results of the survey show that, you know, the effects of sexual harassment is very, very far and long-reaching. So the necessity for a standalone act is very, very important. Similarly to the Domestic Violence Act, you know, prior to 1985, there was no act. Mm. And yet you can see domestic violence is such a huge issue. So the necessity of a Domestic Violence Act was so important then and is still important. And the same thing applies to the Sexual Harassment Bill.
So we've talked about how 2020 hasn't exactly been, you know, the best of years, whether it's because of politics or more significantly because of the COVID-19, because of the lockdowns. Some plans have been derailed. What are your goals heading into 2021?
First thing first is we would like to see the more progressive government to look into gender-based violence issue seriously. And also, we would like to see in 2021 the amendment of the Employment Act to be discussed in the Parliament, as well as the stalking, to make the stalking an offence in the Penal Court, because this is two of the things that we are currently still campaigning on. And we look forward in 2020 to see this being tabled and also being discussed and being passed by the government by next year, so that we could see the more sustainable and progressive way how we could handle, especially for gender-based violence issues.
Nisha, what about Awam?
Well, we would like to continue our campaign to make sure that the Sexual Harassment Bill gets tabled. If it's not going to get tabled in 2020 for whatever reason, we definitely would like to see it become a reality as a standalone act in 2021. So we are going to be continuing our campaign towards that end. We see a lot of engagement from the public working with Awam to actually push for this bill. And, you know, we started out our campaign as the Awam for the Bill campaign, and we had to change it to Rakyat for the Bill campaign, because so many people actually got really interested in supporting us in pushing for this bill. So I think that the one thing that, as Rusni said, you know, WAO wants to see a progressive government. And so Awam agrees completely with that goal and that desire. And one of the best ways for us to be able to see a progressive government, and we open the door to the government, we give them this channel, pass the Sexual Harassment Bill, and you will be seen as a progressive government for sure. So that's like, you know, a low-hanging fruit.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Just pick it. You know? don't let go of this opportunity. I think the government is also, you know, they are in a precarious position, because, you know, it's it, it is an unelected government. So, you know, you want to be able to get the public to have faith and believe in you. But for 2021, also based off the current budget that we saw this year, we'd like to see the government a little bit more responsive towards women and women's needs. So as they plan their budget for the coming years, that they try to look at it from a gendered perspective. We would also, AWAM actually is also reaching out a lot more to the B40 community. We see a real increase in mental health issues. There is, you know, and we see in the B40, we see in the M40, we also see in the T20. And we would like to actually have a lot more services out there for people to be able to get counseling, especially when it comes to mental health issues. And this AWAM being an organization that is inclusive, we opened these services not just to women, but also to men. And we would also like to see really a lot more advocacy, not just from AWAM, but from other women's groups and other organizations, for more women, capable, smart women in politics, especially in the political process. You know, you don't have to be a politician, but you should get involved in the political process, because we definitely need more smart, capable women in parliament to be able to, you know, run the country.
Oh, I definitely agree with you there. We do need more capable women in our political scene. I mean, right now we have way too many old men running our country. All right, very quickly before we wrap up, how can survivors of gender-based violence, or perhaps friends and families of survivors, reach out to you guys to ask for help? Nisha?
AWAM has a helpline. I'm going to give the number. It's 016-237-4221. And you can call this WhatsApp or call us. And, you know, we will try our very best to support you for whatever needs that you may have at the moment. You can also email us at awam@awam.org.my. You can also get us via direct messaging through our Twitter account at Awam Malaysia, our Instagram account at Awam Malaysia, and also at Awam Malaysia on Facebook. So we use all kinds of channels for people to approach us. We also have people who walk in. It's a little bit difficult now because of the CMCO. We don't always encourage it, but if you don't have a choice, you can always walk in. But obviously, the best way to get in touch with us is to call us at 016-237-4221.
Okay. And what about you, Rusni?
Yeah, of course. WAO also have a hotline, which is 03-7956-3488. If anyone needs any help in any kind of violence that they are facing. And also we have the SMS and also WhatsApp, which is the Thing I Need 8, Tina, at 018-988-8058. They can reach out us also through our online social media, which is the Women's AIDS Organization, through Instagram, Twitter, as well as Facebook. Just reach out to us if you need any help. And through our email, info@wao.org.my. So I really, really encourage, especially to women out there, if they need help, they need advice how they can help other people. For example, you guys can reach to us, WAO or AWAM.
And with that, Rusni, Nisha, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Dash. Thanks, Rusni.
Thanks, Nisha.
I've been speaking with Nisha Sabanayagam, Program and Operations Manager of the All Women's Action Society, aka AWAM, as well as Rusni Tajari, Senior Advocacy Officer of the Women's Aid Organization, also known as WAO. And in conjunction with International Day of the Elimination of Violence Against Women, we were looking back at 2020, how COVID-19 and lockdowns contributed to the rise in gender-based violence, as well as 2021 goals. So if you missed any part of this conversation or any previous Live and Learn episodes, you can check out the podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my, or even subscribe to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Just search BFM Live and Learn. Once again, I'm Darshan Johan, and this has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.